In December, Tristan's mom died very unexpectedly. Within a span of 3 days, it was, hey, Becky isn't feeling well, and they admitted her to the hospital. And then, oh good, it's not COVID, maybe a bacterial infection. And then, it's also pancreatic cancer, and she probably has a year to live. On Christmas Eve morning, the day after her diagnosis, I noticed 3 missed calls from Oregon. The infection had taken over very quickly, and she was gone. Becky was enthusiastic, empathetic, hilarious. You could take any person in the world, stick them in a grocery store line next to Becky, and by the time they'd reach the register, they would be friends, somehow complete with inside jokes about the previous 4 minutes they had spent together. When I first met Tristan, he told me very seriously that I would probably like his mom better than him. I'm not here to confirm or deny the accuracy of that prediction, but the loss was huge. My last conversation with her was about 12 hours before she died. I was telling her about how 4-year-old Atticus had been nervous and unsettled by me crying that day as we were all processing the sudden news of terminal cancer. At one point, he'd sidled up to me and done a really cartoonish elbow jab, saying, "Mama, could you give us a smile?" She was delighted by the unintentional smarminess of his coping, and we laughed like we always, always did. When she died, I wrestled with the near constant urge to call her so that we could talk about how ridiculous it was that she was dead. We would laugh. She would be comforting, wise, and irreverent. When I agreed to do storytelling today and was given the theme, Come to the Water, I thought about a story that I'm going to tell you about water and about Becky. Actually, when I was initially given the theme, I told Tristan that I always find summer worship to be very meaningful, but that if somebody had told me that Come to the Water had been the theme for the last 10 years, I would believe them. It just sounds like a classic summer worship theme, which made me worry that I had nothing new to say about water. So I read the scripture, and I thought about the dual nature of water in the Bible. Water as threatening as the leftover chaos from creation that we see in stories of floods and the Red Sea. Water as healing, living water, and end-time visions of water flowing from the city to heal the nations. Baptism, moving water from threat to initiation. Water as a test, water as a source. Further down in the scripture from today, the psalmist assures us that when we pass through the water, we will be safe. You let people ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, yet you have brought us out to a spacious place. When Emery was 3, we were visiting Oregon and decided to do an afternoon hike with Becky. We went to McDowell Creek, a beautiful place with steep trails, rushing streams, and several waterfalls. Tristan and a tiny Emery chose to wade along one of the rivers where the water was shallow and wouldn't get their clothes wet. The water was moving, but it was only ankle deep, so Emery was a little nervous, but excited to be wading. Becky and I set off on a trail loop, planning to meet up with the other two when we were finished. Becky had a funny mix of religious guilt and absolute delight and irreverence. These dual feelings about faith came out in funny ways. When Tristan was little, he had a drawing book that gave step-by-step instructions on how to sketch things, separated into various categories like nature or holidays. Tristan's favorite was the creepy Halloween section, but Becky made some immediate rules about what could and could not be drawn. Haunted houses and skeletons were fine. Witches and devils were absolutely forbidden because those two could get into your heart. And we're not really sure what would happen then, but definitely God would not like it. At the same time, she was delighted by well-placed swears. And while swearing was generally not allowed, she made up a rule that if the family was on one of their many summer camping trips, for as long as they were camping, swearing was permitted and even encouraged. There were very clear boundaries. The words were only for camping, and you definitely never took the name of the Lord in vain. But her children and eventually her grandchildren were delighted and appropriately scandalized by camp swearing. Her religious anxiety faded over time. By the time her children had children, she was enthusiastically making beautiful quilts and intricate costumes of any creepy or magical thing her grandchildren came up with. She still loved a well-placed swear and no longer reserved it for camping, although occasionally after one that was particularly well-placed, she would lean over and conspiratorially whisper, "I don't think God minds if I say that." But we all understood that she was a little bit worried that he did. While Becky and I walked and talked on the trail, she told me stories about her coworkers and asked me very on-brand questions like, what do you think would be the most hostile-sounding name for a Christmas elf? 5 minutes in, we heard the distant sound of a child shriek and then a terrible wail. Before I had processed what I was hearing, I turned toward Becky to find that she had taken off, forgoing the trail entirely and disappearing into the woods. The story from Tristan's perspective is that he and Emery were having a great time wading along a shallow section of the river, and as they were stepping across some rocks, the water suddenly dropped off steeply and Emery fell completely in, coming up freezing and terrified. As he scooped her up and was trying to soothe her, they heard a great crashing sound coming through the trees toward them. Becky came bursting out of the forest, yelling, Emery, you did it, that was amazing. She continued, telling Emery about how she had fallen into the river when she was little, and how Tristan had fallen into the river when he was little. And in a very short time, she had convinced Emery that she had just completed a kind of genetic mission, and that she was also probably something like the actual queen of the river now. By the time I reached everyone, Emery's terror of the water had shifted into a kind of pride, and she marched down the trail to our car in only her tennis shoes and underwear, holding her wet clothes on top of her head and yelling vaguely royal-sounding things to anyone we met along the trail. Water as a test, water as a source. Becky assured her that she had passed through safely. Emery's life now a slightly more spacious place.